Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Independent Teacher Podcast with me, your host, Susan Pallister. Now, in today's show, I'm going to be talking to Louise Lee, and she is the Director of Initial Teacher Training at the King Edward's Consortium in Birmingham. What we're going to be talking about is teaching as a career, but we're also going to be delving into the Initial Teacher Training Market Review and all the problems and controversies that that appears to have created. Before we get started, I just wanted to ask Louise if she could tell us how we chose the title of today's podcast, which is Teaching, It's the Best Job in the World. So over to you, Louise.
Well, thank you, Susan. It's a pleasure to join you today. Well, this really comes from the chair of our partnership, so the person I work for, Linda Johnson. And she's been in teaching for 40 years. She's a very experienced head teacher. And she said to me on my first day, teaching really is the best job in the world. And actually, she says it to all of our new trainees when they first start the course. And she's absolutely right. I mean, if you think about it, what other job can you do where you can make such a difference to young people, to the future of our country, and enjoy yourself all at the same time and enjoy your subject?
Yeah.
So I suppose for me, that's our main mission here in what we do.
I just wanted to mention what you're saying there about making a difference, because I don't think I really thought about that when I went into teaching. I just really wanted to teach my subject. But over the years, I've received so many moving and touching emails or messages from students that I taught in some cases, you know, 35 years ago. One of the messages I got quite recently was from a young man, and he just said to me, "You probably don't remember this. You said something to me that changed my life in one of your lessons, and it made me believe in myself. And it was like a turning point for me. And I feel," he said, "that the person I am now and the work I'm doing now actually was started by you. And I wanted to thank you for that." It's an incredible career for anybody thinking of going into teaching. It really is. So I think Linda's so right there.
It really is. And actually, you can see behind me, these are thank you cards from my trainees with similar messages, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so, you know, you don't realise at the time that one comment or that kindness or that bit of inspiration or that challenge, what it means to somebody until much later. Yeah. So that's a lovely story.
So tell me about you, Louise. What do you do, and what is the King Edward's Consortium? Where do you fit in within the educational landscape?
Okay, so my role is Director of Initial Teacher Training, and it's a very varied role, but primarily my job is to recruit and train graduates to be secondary school teachers. And it's a real privilege to work here. So essentially, the consortium is a school-centred initial teacher training provider, or a SCIT for short. And essentially, we're a group of 22 secondary schools in Birmingham. And we work together to train these graduates to become secondary school teachers and really to grow them and keep them, if we can, in the local area. And we don't just recruit any old graduates. You know, every year we recruit a really, how can I put it, a really diverse cohort, people from all sorts of different walks of life, different ages, at different stages in their life and in their career, perhaps. But they all come with some shared values. And actually, you've already picked up on a couple of those. So they love their subject and they love young people. They want to make a difference. And so we recruit probably 30 graduates a year and train them on a one-year programme and then send them out into the profession. And I suppose it's a little bit like you might have heard of a university course. Sometimes in England we call that a PGCE. And although we're not recruiting on that big scale, trainees come to us and they get the same qualifications. So they get their qualified teacher status, which in England is your badge. That's your professional qualification that allows you to teach in a maintained school. And we also partner with the university so they can do some master's level study as well. So I suppose we're doing something similar to what a university does, but on a much smaller scale. And I suppose our trainees, they will feel like they're perhaps apprentices. So they're learning on the job. So they spend a lot more time in school. They come to our training centre one day a week for training. And the rest of the time they're in school, obviously supported. We don't leave them on their own. And they grow and they flourish over the year. And it's amazing to see what people achieve in what is essentially quite a short space of time.
How many hours do they actually spend in the classroom?
So what we ask them to do is to teach a maximum of 12 hours a week, but not straight away. So we don't just sort of throw them in the deep end. We do an induction in July before the summer holiday, so they're not worried over the summer about what's going to happen. And they'll spend the first 3 weeks of the term, which starts in September, observing the classes they're going to teach. And then they'll step in gradually. So they'll do 4 hours, then 6 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours, and up to 12 hours, which is about 50% of a qualified teacher's timetable in England. And they'll always have somebody with them, watching them, giving them a thumbs up, giving them feedback, which is the most important thing, about how it's going and what they're doing. And then by the end of the year, they're confident enough and proficient enough to teach on their own. And they love that. They sort of feel frightened about it to start with, but they love the freedom in the end and the fact that they can do that. And that gets them really, I suppose, well prepared for then going out into the profession and taking up their first post.
And do they just work in one school, Louise?
No, so one of the things that we do is we send them to two different schools, and that's a government requirement, and I think that's a good one. And our partnership is very varied, and it makes them really, really, I think, attractive to prospective employers, because they can say they've had these contrasting experiences. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it also helps them to work out where they feel they'll be best suited to making that difference that they want to make.
So that sounds absolutely brilliant and really fantastic for anybody training within the consortium. So what is the initial teacher training market review, and why is the Department for Education in the UK commissioned this particular review?
Right. So I suppose this all stems from the issue of teacher supply. So this is nothing new in the UK. There has been a difficulty for many years in recruiting teachers. And so obviously the Department for Education's mission is to try and recruit enough people in the right areas with the right expertise. And so the previous school Minister for School Standards, who's actually just been moved out of his post, Nick Gibb, commissioned this review. And actually he had, obviously it's an umbrella aim of feeding the system, of improving teacher supply, but he had two main goals, I think. And the first was to reduce complexity in the marketplace for applicants. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, at the moment, certainly in England, when someone decides they want to be a teacher, that's great, but actually the application process can be quite complicated and quite daunting. And there are lots of providers in England offering teacher training. So there are lots of universities who offer great courses. There are skits like the consortium that offer courses, and also small groups of other schools and organisations like Teach First, you might have heard of. Mm. And so when they come to apply, it can be quite confusing for them. So I think I agree with him in that sense, that there needs to be some way to reduce complexity so that no one's put off. I'll give you an example. I remember looking on the system, the application system, at physics in the West Midlands, and there were 106 options to train to teach physics just in the West Midlands. Mm. Just part of the country, and that's quite a lot of options to go through. So obviously one of the things he wanted to do was to make it easier for people who've decided they want to teach to apply. Mm-hmm. And the second thing he said he wanted to do was to improve the quality of training that new entrants to the profession get. Mm. Which is interesting, because at the same time the Department for Education are selling their QTS International qualification, which is essentially wanting to export what the department calls our world-class initial teacher training system to others outside of England. But anyway, he says he wants to improve quality. And I think this is part of a bigger picture of reforms that the Department for Education has been making over a number of years now. So that layer is just about trainee teachers. There's something called the Early Career Framework now. Mm. For people in their first couple of years of teaching once they've qualified, and a suite of professional qualifications for those who are perhaps more experienced, right through to head teachers and executive head teachers. So it's part of what they would say is a bigger picture. And so what the previous Minister for School Standards did was he commissioned an expert group of people to try and work out how to put this plan into action and how to build on some of the reforms they'd already made. Now, you might have heard of something, Susan, called the ITT Core Content Framework, which is something that the government introduced very recently, which is essentially a document, it's a very lengthy document that tells providers precisely what we should be teaching trainee teachers. And I'll come back to that, because actually there's some controversy around that and the idea of actually government prescribing specifically what we should be teaching. So the expert group is an interesting one. It's quite a small group of people who wrote this review and did the sort of the research behind it. So it's chaired by someone called Ian Balcombe, who's a chief executive of a multi-academy trust, so of a big group of schools. Then we've got sort of John Blake, who's from ARC, Richard Gill, who's the chair of the Teaching Schools Council, Reuben Moore from Teach First, and Professor Sam Tweedleson, who's the director of Sheffield Institute for Education. So quite a varied group.
And well respected, I would say, as well.
Yes, very well respected, and from quite different areas of the sector. I think there would have been others who would have liked to have been invited into that group. But they've produced a very lengthy report, and you know, with quite a wide-ranging set of recommendations.
Have you had any involvement at all with this review?
So I was invited to a roundtable meeting by the Department for Education back in May. So this review was published in July, and they did seek views from people like me in the sector, from SCIPs, from universities, about what we thought about it before it was published, so that we could perhaps give our input. And I think from that there were a few tweaks made to it, but substantially it remained as it was in May in terms of the final version.
I think it's fair to say that it hasn't been particularly well received, has it, by the sector? And I just wondered if you could run through why that has been the case and what has worried people, probably like you, so much.
Well, where do I start? probably what I would say first. I mean, just in terms of the recommendations, and I think some of the recommendations are sensible and others I'm concerned about. I think one of the things that the report suggests is that all providers, so all universities and all SCITs who currently provide initial teacher training like we do, or to providers who want to come into the market, that we all will have to apply again for accreditation. And that is very concerning, because of course that means that the future now is uncertain for us, and that's also quite a big task that we've already been through before. I mean, getting accreditation is not an easy business, and so I think there's a lot of disquiet about that, because of course that may mean that some providers may close their doors, either because they're not reaccredited or because they decide that actually the reaccreditation process is so burdensome that actually they just can't do it. And actually, I think a lot of small providers like King Edward's Consortium may well be thinking, do we have the resources to apply for accreditation whilst we're also trying to do the job of training teachers and training them really well?
And getting through the pandemic as well, presumably.
Absolutely. And I think one of the other things I would say is that I think this is a distraction that none of us need. We need to be focused on recovering from the pandemic, helping our children and young people who've missed out so much. And our focus needs to be on them and on training more people to teach them. And that is a significant task to do it well. I think one of the other things, and I mentioned this idea of the ITT Core Content Framework earlier, which is a document, a very lengthy document produced by the government, which essentially prescribes what we have to teach. And I think there is some concern in the sector about academic freedom. And at what point does a provider or does someone in a role like mine lose agency and lose the opportunity to actually to use one's professional judgment to teach the people in front of them? And I think certainly the universities are very concerned about that. I mean, Oxford and Cambridge have released statements saying that if these proposals go ahead, they may well exit the market. 70% of initial teacher training is provided by universities. That's a big gamble for the government to take if actually universities are feeling like that. And actually, I wouldn't want to be the Secretary of State or the Minister for School Standards who forces Oxford and Cambridge and skips potentially like King Edward's Consortium out of the market.
Why do you think the review have suggested that there is core content that everybody has to follow? Why have they done that?
I think this is predicated on an assumption that perhaps teacher training providers are not teaching the right things, which is an interesting one to me. I think the profession has certainly moved forward in recent years, and there's this idea that actually, and I agree with this, that actually what we should be doing should be informed by research. And certainly here at King Edward's Consortium, we want to send our trainees out into the profession being able to think critically about the research they're reading and the decisions their schools are making. So I don't know whether there's a suggestion perhaps from the department that some providers are not able to teach things that are current. I also wonder if actually there's political motivation here. I mean, there is a tension between certainly universities and this particular government. And whether that lies at the heart of it, I wouldn't like to go any further on that one.
Right. Okay. So are they the main causes then of the concern that's been expressed quite publicly about the review?
I think there are others. So from my point of view as someone who runs a relatively small provider, there seems to be, although they say there isn't an explicit note about this in the review, but there seems to be a preference perhaps for doing initial teacher training at scale. And that worries us, because of course we tend to have cohorts of about 30 every year, just secondary trainees across a range of subjects, mainly shortage subjects, so subjects like the sciences, English, maths, languages. We also do classics, so Latin, ancient Greek. And I don't think everyone is suited to being trained in a large cohort. I think it works very well for some, and I think our universities do a great job. But I also think there's a place in the market for smaller operations like ours. And I think it's a place where, for some people, they need to be in a cohort where someone like me really knows them well, and they can have very individual and personalised attention. And I think it's also helpful for our schools. I know all of our head teachers and what their individual schools' needs are. And I think at scale, those things can be lost. And of course, if a provider like ours, like the consortium, were to close, then we would lose provision in such important subjects like classics. And there aren't that many people out there doing that and doing it well. So I think that from our side of the table is very worrying. And then there are some practical considerations. So, you know, at the moment, trainees go to two schools, as we talked about earlier. There's this idea of an intensive practice placement, which sounds very good in theory, and I think has been used to good effect in other countries. But practically speaking, how we're going to find capacity in our schools to do that sort of placement, where essentially trainees will go in perhaps a group of 10 to one school all at the same time and observe and work with a teacher in their subject on some very specific things that might be around explanations in their subject, or it might be around behaviour management, and they'll work very intensively for perhaps a period of 3 or 4 weeks. Now that sounds great in one way, but actually the reality of that in terms of getting that teacher off timetable, getting people just physically into the building, I think is very difficult. And I think the final thing, and there are lots of things people are concerned about, but on this note of practical difficulty, is this idea of an increased requirement in terms of the number of hours for people who are mentors, so those people who are working day to day with the trainees. Now, I fully support proper training for mentors, but actually the number of hours that they're suggesting, I think, may lead head teachers to say, I want to work with you, Louise, at the King Edward's Consortium, but actually we just don't have capacity. We can't release our staff for this number of hours. And of course, there are so many other pressures on the system. What we don't want to do, thinking back to our original goal here about teacher supply, is to put something in place with unintended consequences, if you see what I mean.
Okay, so was there anything that was really advantageous in the proposals?
Well, I think, as I said earlier on, I do support the idea of reducing complexity for applicants. I think we do need to make the process easier. And who can argue about, you know, against quality? I think we all recognise a lot of this report and the ambition that they have to maintain quality. I would say we already have a high quality system. And I think really there are easier and less destructive ways of achieving those two things. Okay. I think, you know, we have a regulator, we have Ofsted. They should be able to go about their business and assess whether people or not are delivering quality. And actually their new framework, their very exacting framework, aims to do that. And I also think that actually administratively, the government, they've actually made a new application system. There are some administrative tweaks that they could make to the system that would make things easier for applicants without having to go through this sort of upheaval that's potentially on the horizon.
So where do you think we're heading then? How do you see this process going? What's going to happen, in your view, to ITT over the next few years? Crystal ball gazing.
Yes, I feel like one of those correspondents, the BBC correspondents at New Year, when they sort of give their predictions for the year ahead. So here we go. It'll be really interesting. Obviously, we've got a new Secretary of State for Education, Nadeem Zahawi, and a new Minister for School Standards, Robin Walker. It'll be interesting to see whether they are as attached to these proposals as the previous people in their role, Nick Gibb and Gavin Williamson, and whether or not they actually feel they have other priorities, and I feel that they do.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what their response to this is. I think the best we can hope for perhaps now is that bodies like the Chartered College of Teaching and NASBITS, that's the National Association for School-Based Teacher Trainers, at least persuade the DfE to just pause and perhaps move the timescale, if nothing else. I think if they do go ahead with these proposals, and the idea at the moment is that these would come into force in September 2023, so not a great deal of time. Essentially, there's likely to be an announcement in November, and the reaccreditation process will start in earnest and will need to be completed by the summer. I think you're going to see quite a big shake-up. You may well see institutions like Cambridge leaving the marketplace. And new ones entering without any previous expertise. I also wonder what will happen in the independent sector, and whether the independent sector organisations may well decide that actually some of these changes are just actually too difficult for them, and actually they could offer something of their own, similar to QTS, similar perhaps again to the early career framework. And I think it'll be really interesting to see what move they make, because a lot of the independent school head teachers I know are very, very committed to training teachers and supporting them, particularly in their early career. And we work with them now, but actually financially, and just thinking back to the things about academic freedom, I wonder what they will do. It's going to be interesting, isn't it, Susan?
It is. Speaking of somebody who spent most of their time in the independent sector. So interesting times ahead.
Absolutely. And I suppose this brings me back to where we started, because I think it's easy sometimes to overcomplicate things, isn't it? And not to see what's there in front of us and actually our core business. We talk about this idea of becoming a teacher and changing lives here at the King Edward's Consortium, and actually There are so many people out there thinking about teaching right now who need stability, who need quality and need to be looked after so that they'll flourish and go into our profession and change the lives of the children they're going to teach. And I hope that the Secretary of State for Education keeps hold of that in whatever he plans next.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point probably to end on, Louise.
Well, thank you, Susan. It's been such a pleasure.
Well, thank you, Louise, for this this particular episode. And as I say, it's such an important issue, you know, how we train our teachers and making sure that we get the best quality teachers coming into the profession. Thank you ever so much, Louise.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Independent Teacher Podcast with your host, Susan Pallister, and my special guest on today's show, Louise Lee, the Director of Initial Teacher Training at King Edward's Consortium. Don't forget to tune in to future episodes of the Independent Teacher Podcast.